Gestern war für viele ein Tag zum Aufatmen. Donald Trump hat das Weiße Haus verlassen und sein Amt des US-Präsidenten an seinen Nachfolger Joe Biden übergeben. In Washington fand gestern die Amtseinführung Bidens statt. Angesichts der Stürmung des Kapitols vor zwei Wochen und der aufgeheizten Stimmung im Land in den vergangenen Monaten im Rahmen der Corona-Pandemie, der Black Lives Matter-Bewegung und den nicht enden wollenden Fehltritten der Regierung, ein historisch vielleicht noch aufgeladenerer Moment. Jetzt ist der Moment gekommen, in dem ich auf Englisch switche. To have a deeper look on the inauguration yesterday and on the US in the past days, I'm going to switch to English now, and I'm happy to announce that we get the chance to talk to Kazembe Balagun, who is on his way to New York City right now, where he lives. Mr. Balagun is project manager at the Rosa Luxemburg Association, author, activist, and an active member of the Black Lives Matter movement. Good morning, Mr. Balagun. Thanks for talking to us.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Mr. Balagun, first of all, how was your day yesterday?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was the feeling here is one of elation, of a lot of joy. There's definitely a sense of turning a leaf over. You know, the past few days in America have been quite tense, particularly following the insurrection of January 6th. And it was certainly a great worry around what will happen on this day. But, you know, the fact that, you know, there was a peaceful transfer of power and that there seemed to be a page turned, you know, more broadly for the American people brought a lot of relief to many of us. So you know, we're you know, very much in a good mood.
Yeah, that's one thing I would love to go into some kind of deeper. How did you perceive the past months living in the U.S., especially the last days of Trump's presidentship, the storming of the U.S. Capitol and the awaiting of the inauguration?
Well, I mean, things have been very tense for quite some time. I mean, as you could quite imagine, since November and even before November, Donald Trump has went on a tremendous rampage in terms of talking about voter fraud and voter malfeasance. But the very fact of the matter is that the voter fraud and voter malfeasance that he was projecting, which was completely untrue. There was no evidence of voter fraud. But what it allowed him to do was to ramp up his base. And he did so in a way that was completely irresponsible. And it caused a lot of harm and damage in which, you know, extra parliamentary forces or people, you know, outside of the law were able to start exercise, you know, almost vigilante type power in the state. So even before the January 6th, I mean, it's situations where, you know, far right protesters would show up at electors' houses and, you know, and threaten electors' children. You had situations of a plot in Michigan to kidnap the governor. And, you know, and this is not to also mention that, you know, coming off a very intense 2020 where there was a tremendous amount of tension between the police and the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, there was a sense of this, like, of an overarching, like, lack of lawlessness and a lack of governance, to be quite frank. So, you know, following January 6th, where I was sitting in my living room, I was watching on television, there was a kind of a pit in my stomach, and there was a kind of a tremendous worry that something had gone haywire, you know, in this situation. But I think that a couple of things that kind of prevailed. One is that, quite broadly, quite frankly, that the broad swath of American people, a majority of American people, you know, fell on the side of democracy and fell on the side of doing the right thing in terms of, like, supporting the election and confirming the election of Joe Biden, which is obviously he, you know, him and Kamala Harris, the first African-American vice president, won very hotly. And this was a broad swath of people, including many Republicans that did so. But even despite that fact, you know, the worry, I think, is continuously now is that Trump has 74 million people who voted for him, and that there's also just a number of Republicans who, even in the midst of this rebellion, made a decision to support overturning the elections. So, I mean, I think that the question right now is, like, how do we hold those folks accountable? How do we do a deeper investigation in terms of what happened that day? But also, I think, just more deeply, how do we strengthen people's movements to ensure that, you know, something like this never happens again?
I would love to talk with you about the cabinet under Joe Biden. So what do you think? First of all, Kamala Harris is not just the first woman to become vice president of the U.S., but also the first woman of color to hold this kind of office. Besides that, Deep Haaland is the first indigenous American to become a minister. Pete Buttigieg is openly gay. Lord Austin is the first Afro-American to become the minister of defense, just to name a few. What chances do you see in a cabinet which is a lot more diverse than the ones before?
Yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, this is certainly, I mean, Joe Biden came in with a promise of having a cabinet that, quote, looks like a lot more like America, and he's lived up to that promise. I think specifically is also a reflection of the fact that, you know, the black vote, the African-American vote was decisive in his victory. And he said on election night that, you know, he owed a tremendous debt to the black people in terms of assuring the victory, that his victory was assured to for black folks. I think that, you know, it's one thing to talk about the diversity, and of course, like, it's a relief to look at the diverse level, the diversity in Joe Biden's cabinet versus, like, you know, the previous administration. But now I think it's a question of really getting down to work, right? So it's not just going to be about diversity. It's going to be about, like, you know, is Joe Biden, you know, going to be able to do the things that really need to happen to make sure that America does the right thing, not only just in terms of domestically, but internationally. And that means, like, the, you know, rejoining our international institutions. But also domestically, how do you join a broad rebuilding of America along lines of, like, racial, social, ecological justice? That means, like, broadly supporting a Green New Deal, supporting Medicare for All, which is health care for everyone, making sure that the police in black communities are held accountable for police violence. These are, like, big questions that are going to be facing Joe Biden in the next four years. Certainly he has the momentum. Certainly he has the political will. The question right now is that, you know, that he follows through on that and he makes sure that it happens. And I think that the progressives here on the ground want to hold him accountable, want to make sure that, you know, that every ounce of our strength goes into making sure that it's the most broad-reaching progressive demands as possible in the United States right now. And that's going to be a challenge for the next 4 years.
Since Biden is pretty glorified as Trump's main opponent, it's easy to maybe miss possible points of critique on the new president and his fellows. Which possible weaknesses do you see in the new government?
You know, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, certainly, I mean, Biden won a tremendous, like, anyone but Trump victory. And he's also just someone who was, like, you know, has always run on the center and wanting not to go too far-reaching. But I think that the issue that right now is that, you know, it is one is that there has to be a sense of restoring faith in, like, in governance. And I think that, you know, with the complete malfeasance of the previous administration in terms of the handling of the coronavirus, including the kind of, like, lax kind of, like, ways in which the rollout has happened with the vaccine, you know, there's a tremendous crisis of faith, I think, you know, for many people in the government itself. And so I think part of which is that Biden has to be able to come in and just be able to, like, stabilize the ship and be able to govern. But I also think that there has to be a sense of boldness and a sense of doing some bold thinking. And I think that this is something where, alongside Biden's victory, I mean, you saw, like, the victory of people like Corinne Bush and Jamal, and, like, you know, the squad, AOC, and a number of different people, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who have been able to really kind of put out a broad progressive agenda. So I think that, you know, Biden's have to be pushed on that, on those levels. I think that's going to be super important in terms of, like, that's the new work that he has to do, and not to be settled in kind of, like, a centrist type of vision.
Traditionally, on Inauguration Day, there have been protests, at least since the Disrupt J20 protests against Trump's inauguration. This year, there is an explicit call to action from a network of anti-border activists. The Biden administration intends to continue running immigration and customs enforcement detention centers, which most people know as ICE detention centers, which the group describes as concentration camps for undocumented people. I would love to know, how did the protests around this year's inauguration look like, or still looks like?
Well, I mean, this year, I mean, certainly, I mean, this has been a very different year because of the growing tensions and the fallout from January 6th. And so, you know, I'm not as familiar with some of those levels of protests, but I would say this, that I know Joe Biden has promised recently an 8-year path to citizenship, and that's just not good enough. I mean, you know, no, this is the type of gradualism I'm talking about. There has to be an immediate solution in terms of freeing the people held in detention centers, and also freeing the reuniting children with their parents. That's to be priority number one. But also, just overall, just a streamlined and quickened sense of path to citizenship for the millions and millions of undocumented children who are living in the shadows here in the country. Not just the children, but also their parents who are living in the shadows of the country. I mean, this is particularly true not only in the context of, you know, what you mentioned in terms of the border crisis, but also in the context of this COVID-19 crisis, to make sure that those folks who are immigrants who don't have citizenship feel safe to go to hospitals, or feel safe to get help that they need during the COVID-19 crisis. Many of the undocumented farmers have been in the field assuring food security for this nation. And beyond that, irregardless of that, it's the right thing to do. We need to go beyond the xenophobic, white nationalist, racist rhetoric of the past and really embrace, you know, our immigrant brothers and sisters in their path to citizenship, full stop.
I would love to have another look on the inauguration yesterday. So what we saw in the media were about 25,000 soldiers of the U.S. National Guard who were deployed to secure the handover Trump-Biden. What does this kind of necessary protection of the Capitol means for the U.S.-American democracy?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously this is something that is quite concerning, and also, like, it created a sense of not the best visual optics in terms of like, what a democracy could look like. I know for a fact that this is a situation where those troops were placed as a reaction to January 6th, obviously, but, you know, in a broader sense, I mean, you know, what a democracy is able to do is having people to be able to protest and to be able to disagree without being violently disagreeable. And so really what's concerning for me in a deeper sense, the number of police that have been involved were involved in the January 6th protest. And these are some of the police officers who patrol Black communities and making sure that those folks are held accountable, but also in a deeper sense, like how these like kind of like white nationalist racist ideology has like influenced some of our security forces. I think that's a deeper, concern. But beyond that, I think a broader concern is that Joe Biden yesterday was a sense of he wanted to have a tone of healing and atonement and also grief. There's over 400,000 people who have died of COVID-19 crisis. I think that it's important that, you know, they start off the new administration with that sense of grief and atonement and healing. And I think that that's going to start the process of being able to strengthen our democratic institutions in a sense of governance so that, you know, we can get to work of like of not only doing the work of building the country, but also being able to do the work of also protesting for rights, which is, I think, is a guaranteed enshrinement of our rights here in this country. And it should be, whether, you know, specifically for those of us who are involved in movements for Black Lives, movements for the environment, movements for women's rights and things of that nature.
How do you personally look on the upcoming 4 years?
For me, honestly, today, I'm cautiously optimistic. But to be honest with you, like, I feel that what I've seen in the past, like, year and a half is not just the strength of, you know, our politicians, but really the strength of, like, people's movements. Seeing people who engage in mutual aid and food security work and make sure that people are fed. Seeing people engage in work around doing medical work around protests and making sure people who are protesting are safe. Thinking about the fact that 15 to 20 million Americans took part in the Black Lives Matter movement protest. The protest is still going on to this day. Those are things for me that I feel like I'm much more excited about and heartened by. I think politicians will reflect and come in with the pressure of the movements that are on the streets. And I feel that, you know, with this particular moment right now, you're seeing a global shift in terms of pressuring governments and being able to actually have a say of the people in the government. And I think that that's something that for me is very exciting. So I'll continue to support and to do the work of supporting people's movements to make sure that our politicians have, like, you know, a broader vision of how to govern and how to make sure that we're secure. There's no way that you can talk about, you know, America in the 21st century and not talk about us not having health care. There certainly is no way we can talk about America in the 21st century without us talking about, without the necessity of a racial reckoning ever having around racial and economic justice. I think those are the priorities for me for the next 4 years, like, to roll up my sleeves and make sure that that work continues.
Kazembe Balagun about yesterday's inauguration of Joe Biden as the new U.S.-American president. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, Mr. Balagun. Have a good one. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much. All right, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Yeah, sleep well. Have a good night. Goodbye.
Und wir schalten wieder zurück ins Deutsche. Kazembe Balagun, Projektmanager der Rosa-Luxemburg-Stiftung, im Gespräch über die gestrige Amtseinführung Joe Bidens. Bei dem war es übrigens gerade 3 Uhr früh am Morgen und er war gerade auf der Rückreise zurück nach New York. Also toll, dass er mit uns gesprochen hat.